Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at newspress.com, as well as richarddugan.com, and we podcast at Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and lots of other places, including the homepage of richarddugan.com. Today's program I think you're going to enjoy because it's full of questions. Full of one question. It's full of one question that's going to unleash passion, purpose, and performance in, hopefully everybody, but younger generations. I'm assuming that's younger than, we'll find out from our guest. The title of the book is Answering Why. You know the two-year-old that just won't let that go? Why? And you answer the question and they keep going with why? Well, we're going to find out about that with Mark Perna. And I thank you, Mark, for joining us on the program.
Richard, it's my honor to be with you.
I understand that as we are conversing here, you are in Tucson, Arizona, which is about 100 miles south of Phoenix, where it's my hometown of Phoenix, Arizona.
That's correct. We are nearby, and I'm working at a conference today, and so I'm so glad we could carve out some time to spend together.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, folks, if you don't know who he is, Mark Perna is the founder and CEO of TSF out of Cleveland, Ohio. So he's away from home, a good distance there. It's a full-service strategic communications and consulting firm. It's a dynamic and motivational public speaker. That is Mark, who we're talking about, who is also a recognized voice in student engagement and success. Now, when we talk about the younger generation, and I have no problem saying this, I'm 59. We're talking about people younger than me.
Yes, we are.
You know, as
I'm sorry, Richard. I know that comes as some kind of shock, and I didn't want to be the one to level that to you, but yes,
it happens.
I'm 57, and we're talking about younger than me as well.
I was a teenager, and I was watching the marketing going on television, and at that time, they weren't marketing to me, and I felt left out. Then I couldn't get away from the marketing when I got into my 20s, 30s, and 40s. And now they don't care about me that I'm headed for 60. Actually, they do. That's one fascinating thing is now they figure, you know what? We're not going to miss any opportunity to snag people. We don't care how old they are. But in terms of the young people who are younger than us, and I don't know whether, because I've heard this, I've been told I'm a baby boomer. I was born in 1960, so I guess I'm there. Then we had the different generations. I've heard of Generation X and this generation and that generation giving a letter or number or an acronym or what have you. And supposedly, and with the millennials, I guess they were born, in 2000, something like that? Mm-hmm. The Generation Y, is that a generic term or is that also referring to a particular group of individuals? We'll start with that. Give us a date range as opposed to age range. Who came into this world around what period of time?
Well, I prefer actually to give age ranges because it's easier for people to just kind of lock in on that as to how old the
then
people are.
Give me
let's do this, Richard. Let's frame it this way. So usually when I talk about the Y generation, WHY generation, I'm talking about two generations or what I like to refer to as the younger generations, which, yes, you nailed it. It is younger than you and I. I'm talking about people 39 or younger. There's two generations that I'm talking about. I'm talking about Generation Y millennials, followed up closely by Generation Z coming up right behind them. And Generation Z goes from fetus to 18 years old. Okay. Generation Y goes from 19 to 39 years old. And so when I say the younger generations, I'm talking about everyone 39 and younger. But let me frame it this way so that we head off kind of in the right trajectory.
Yes.
Almost everything you see and hear about young people today in this country who are 39 and younger is largely negatively slanted.
Yes.
You know, they're lazy, they're entitled, and lots of different terms like that are used. And I want to put it out there for our discussion that I go completely the other way. I think they're the most incredible generations to come down the pike. I think they are the most intelligent, resourceful, and pit bull-like generations that we have ever seen in this country. When they see a want to in their life, something they truly want, they will move heaven and earth to get to that want to. Our challenge, Richard, as parents, educators, and employers, is getting them to want something. That's where the battlefield of the future is, because when they don't want something, there's no movement towards what I call their light at the end of the tunnel. So framing it that way, now at least we kind of understand, you know, who we're talking about, and then let's have at it.
Yeah, it's and it is about the want as opposed to the need. And I know that there are the whole I find it rather ironic that I'm in an industry that is supported by sponsors who provide products and services. And I told myself as a kid growing up, because I was aware of what was going on the television and on the radio, because when I listened to the radio, every, I don't know, 3 to 5 to 7 minutes, there was a commercial or two or three or what have you, trying to sell me, a kid under 16, a car. they were promoting cigarettes and liquor and pants and all the other stuff. And of course, they're still doing that. But again, they're now hitting every age. They're not leaving anybody out, because everybody who they're trying to market to has money and they want it. But I find it interesting, as we converse on this program on a regular basis, and you're probably familiar with the law of attraction. Mm-hmm. And there was a part of that in an interview that I did after the interview on the law of attraction, where someone said, oh, they left something out. And what they left out was the fact that just because you want it doesn't necessarily mean it's in your best interest. And I know that's a little different dynamic than what you're bringing up here. Because what you're trying to do, of course, is you're trying to bridge that gap to reach the Y generation. But what is it that you're trying to reach them with?
Well, it depends. It's really, but it's more of an understanding and framing it in a way that the Y generation, WHY, it's how do we connect, engage, and get them to understand whatever it is in their life that they're looking for. So whether it's lifestyle, career, how these things intersect in a way that allows them to start moving down their tunnel towards the light at the end of whatever that tunnel is. And so, you know, I work a lot in the education space. I work with educational organizations, workforce development organization. So it's a lot of it is, how do we attract and retain significantly more of the right kinds of students into the right programs and pathways for all the right reasons? And for workforce development organizations, how do you hire the right person into the right position for the right reasons? So how do you attract them? How do you connect the dots so that, you know, person coming in buys into the vision of the corporation? They understand the reason why, WHY, we're doing this. So it's more connecting from that perspective. It's not, them trying to, you know, figure, you know, specific things necessarily out in their life that they want to achieve or gain or buy or that kind of a thing. It's more, what do they want to go? What is their lifestyle? And so what I teach around the country is, you know, what are they thinking? What makes them tick? Why do they make the decisions they do? And why do they stand still and not make a decision? You know, why are they frozen like deer in the headlights at times? So it's how you unleash that passion, purpose, and performance in their lives is really where I my lane is, and where I'm really trying to help people understand how to connect, engage, and move them forward.
And it's almost like trying to connect and engage with a foreign country. I've interviewed people talking about doing business, for example, with corporations and companies in China. And you cannot do business with corporations in China the way you do in the United States or
Correct.
In Europe, because it's a totally different culture. A simple hand gesture could get you executed. I mean, I'm being facetious, but that's kind of what we're talking about here is dealing with a totally different culture that grew up on the technology that you and I carry around now that could conceivably send us to the moon if we knew how to program it. They say that what we're carrying around now is even better than all the computers combined that put us on the moon back in 69. So isn't that a fair assessment, that we're dealing with, in a manner of speaking, a foreign country's culture, even though they're Americans, but it's because of what they've been exposed to and the things they haven't been burdened with, if we can put it that way, that you and I grew up with, that we just take for granted, in a manner of speaking?
Yeah, well, first thing I want to comment on is, first off, stop making that gesture that's getting you executed, Richard.
Yes,
I think
okay.
You need to, okay, right, whatever that gesture is, man, I think you ought to just take this as a wake-up call that you got to stop doing that gesture.
You betcha.
Anyway, I want to tackle it this way. I tell people all the time that there are two ways to look at the younger generations in this country. Again, anybody 39 or younger, right? There's two ways to look at them. You can either look at them as a challenge to be solved, which, by the way, is what most people look at them as, especially people in our age range, you know, people who are in older generations. Or you can look at them as a tremendous resource to be unleashed in your home, your classroom, or in your place of business. And if you look at them with a second set of eyes, you're significantly further down the path towards connecting, engaging, and helping them determine what it is they want in their life and how can they best start moving down that tunnel towards whatever that light at the end of the tunnel is. And so, you know, I think that's how we connect the dots for young people, because they make decisions in lots of different ways. I'll give you an example. You know, I anyone 39 or younger in this country, I like to call them the Y generation, WHY generation, because frankly, Richard, they need an answer to that question for everything they do. For everything. Mm. I mean, it doesn't matter what they are. And this may be an aha moment. It is when I travel the country, is when you ask a young person 39 or younger to do something and they look back at you and they say, well, why should I do it that way? Most of us take that as a smart aleck response and we give the all-American response back, which of course is because I said so.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the aha. Most young people don't mean it as a smart aleck response. What most young people are really saying is, look, why do we do it this way? You know, because, you know, look, I'm unique, special, important, I'm intelligent, I'm resourceful, I know how to use technology. Why do we do it this way? Because, you know what, there has to be a better way to do this. There must be a way to use Google something. There must be a way to put it in the cloud. There must be a way to get a bigger impact. And yet, you know, we cut their knees out from underneath them and we tell them, you know, just do it because I said so. And what it does is it takes them from a growth mindset to a fixed mindset, as opposed to literally unleashing their passion, purpose, and performance to try to find a solution. So giving them the opportunity to try and giving them full disclosure as to why this is important allows them to connect the journey to whatever that vision is, whatever that purpose is, so that once there's purpose, they can then start to achieve it.
My first position as operations manager back in the early 80s, I asked one of my coworkers, because we were all doing the same task, and I just happened to have the supervisory position too, I need you to do this. And he said, no. I said, well, why? Because you're telling me to. And I said, okay, I need you to do this because, and I gave him a specific reason. And he said, okay, I'll do it for that reason, but not because you're telling me to. Now, bear in mind that I was in a phase of management. I was in my phase of learning about management. And I was in what I referred to as my Hitlerian period. It didn't last long, okay? Because you don't get people to do stuff because I said so. And I learned that early on, so I stopped doing that. And so I'm very grateful to that gentleman for challenging me.
For setting you straight, Richard.
Setting me straight.
Yep.
Absolutely. And I'm willing to learn, man. I really am. And there are still times when I want to go off on somebody and just, yeah. But it's like, okay, how productive is that? How is that going to help the situation that you're trying to resolve? And so forth. And again, this is just with all people of all ages. But when I was living in Phoenix in the early 90s, I bought my first house, and there just happened to be a basketball pole that was already there, no backboard or rim. And so I got a backboard, and I painted up with the Suns colors and everything. It was a lot of fun, and I put a rim up there, and the kids would come over, and I said, look, we're here to play. We're here to have some fun. This is not competitive. We're not doing NBA slam dunk and all this kind of stuff. We're just here to have a good time. And unfortunately, one morning I came out and somebody had jumped up and pulled down the rim. And I was I was dejected. I was so disappointed because my whole effort was to try not to change these kids, but to include them and become a part of the community, a part of the neighborhood, you know. And I just took the stuff down and I never put it back up. It hurt me so much in that regard. And of course, I've since moved here to Santa Barbara where I don't have that problem. But it seems to me that as you clearly stated just a few moments ago, that I wasn't trying to fix them because I didn't really think that there was anything wrong with them. I just wanted them to feel that they could come over if they wanted to and have a good time and enjoy themselves, get some exercise, play a little basketball and so forth. Even if I wasn't there, it would be okay. But nobody fessed up to the destruction. And that was what really, I think, was the more hurtful thing. The generation you're talking about, the WHY generation, is always asking that question, you know, why do this? Why do that? You know, why? And they're legitimate. It's a legitimate question because it seems to me like they've grown up and they've been taught, and I'm not sure where they've got this teaching per se, because to me, I think it's a great question to be asking on a regular basis. I do the same thing. Why the heck did he do that? Why did he say that? What, you know?
Of course.
Because, you know, we'd like to know. But at the same time, I went through some personal growth programs that taught me to give up the need to know why. Okay? Just go with the flow. I'm not, and that's not saying conform, but give up the need to know why. For example, if I was to find out that I was adopted, okay, how is that going to change who I am today? To know if I were, I know I'm not, but if I were, it really wouldn't change things for me. It might explain a few things, but it wouldn't really change my life and the direction that I'm going. So when this Y generation is asking that question on a regular basis, you're barraged by this, and you say that you've been involved in the educational system as well.
And yes,
I'm a huge advocate for education. I want people to be educated on how to think, not what. And it's part of what we talk about on this program about choices and knowledge of those choices. Well, if you don't know that there are choices for you to choose, how are you going to choose them? So that's why I'm a big advocate for people getting an education. And I don't care what age it is, but I'd love to see it happen at the early stages so that they can go off and live and pursue their purpose, the things that they really want to do. What are some of the things that you've come across with the youth that you deal with? And again, as we say youth, they're younger than us, 19 to 39. What are some of the biggest concerns of this generation that are not being, say, addressed by, and I'm going to put it in this context, the powers that be / the institutions that have been around for more than 40 years?
I think to some degree there's, young people today, and now I'm talking basically 20 and under, are significantly more pragmatic than their, millennial counterparts ever were. You know, they're actually concerned about their future. You may not see it in their face all the time, but you do, it is going on inside their head. You know, what are they going to do? Where, what's possible? What kind of options are available? And, the more we start connecting education to workforce development, to potential careers, to things that are possible, because, we've got to kind of, marry together education, workforce development, because the world is just a totally different place than it was 10 years, 20 years, and 30 years ago. I mean, first graders, it's already predicted that 65% of first graders in classes right now, this year, 65% of them are going to be in careers and occupations that don't exist today. So that world has changed. And where I think they get frustrated is that school hasn't changed. The world has, but to a large extent, school is the way it was, years and years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's a wholesale statement. There are, of course, pockets of greatness all over the country.
Sure.
But as a whole, it's largely the same kind of delivery format and the same kinds of things are being taught because we believe that these are the most critical things to learn. And so, I think what happens in many parts of the country is kids become very disengaged because we just live in a different world. I mean, you said it yourself, right? I mean, they've got this device at the end of their hands, that literally can connect them to the world and they can use and they can, it can be an immense distraction, mm-hmm. but it can be an immense tool for good.
Yeah.
And so they see this, and yet, they're made to walk into a classroom, put the phone into a phone jail hanging on the wall, and they can't pick it up unless, that's some way to use it. And so instead of teaching them, the proper etiquette of using it, we're just kind of taking it away and not letting them, use that as part of their education. So for young people today, experience is everything. Because they're pragmatic, they're already predicted to be the largest, 20 and under are predicted to be the largest entrepreneurial generation in history, with nearly 80%. Already reporting that they want to be their own boss. This has tremendous ramifications in workforce development in this country because if 80% of people actually pulled that off, which is, yet to be seen, it pulled it off. I mean, what does that mean to business and industry in this country trying to build skilled workforces and that kind of thing? I mean, that there aren't going to be enough people out there to do these kinds of positions. So, young people today need purpose. They need to understand, why is this important? Why are you, I'm in an algebra class. Why is this important? Now, I think there's great importance in algebra. Algebra is one of those those things that it teaches you how to think. It, you know, it teaches you how to come up with it. But I don't know how well we're connecting the dots for young people so that they know how each piece of their education fits into the grander scheme and picture of where they're going. And I think that's important. They have to understand and connect to that.
I mean, I think you and I both could look back at our respective educations, both grade school and high school, let alone college, but specifically grade school and high school, look at some of the classes that we took, and we'd say, you know what? That course in whatever it was, I'm not using any of that. Why did I even bother taking the class, you know? And so, yeah, I can certainly see where. And of course, we also hear kids going all the way through college, okay, on a Fulbright scholarship and whatever the major was, and they're doing absolutely the opposite of what their major was. You know, I went to college and I majored in philosophy or psychology or chemistry, and I started up this little startup business, and I make these little widgets, and everybody's buying them, and it's incredible, and I'm a millionaire. Well, what about that education that you're still paying for through the student loans? You know, it's like, well, what are you going to do with that? Well, that's my backup plan if this didn't work.
Well, I mean, there are three critical things that young people need today. They need robust academic knowledge, right? I mean, you can't make it in this world without some robust academic knowledge. And there was a time in this country where you could have just robust academic knowledge. I mean, and in fact, you know, Sir Richard, you and I are roughly the same age. I'm a couple of years younger than you, but roughly the same age. Mm-hmm. And we all saw the charts when we were young, didn't we? It was like, you know, the more education you got, the more blank you would make. What's blank? Money, right?
Money.
You'd make more money, right? So if I got a bachelor's degree, I would make X. If I got a master's degree, I would make Y. And if I got, you know, if I went beyond that to a PhD or whatever, you know, I could make potentially Z. But, you know, the world in the shift that the world has made, that's no longer true. It's no longer a lock. You're no longer guaranteed success just because you have a degree or 2 degrees or 3 degrees. The fact is that you need robust academic knowledge. But now in the world today, you must pair it with powerful technical and professional skills. And it's really those three things that will give you a competitive advantage in this changing economy. So technical skills are those technical competencies of being able to actually do something, you know, the actual technical ability to do something, whatever that something is. The professional skills are things that you and I talk about young people all the time, right? It's things like work ethic, punctuality, leadership, communication skills, critical thinking, work-life balance, stress management, flexibility, networking. You know, in many parts of the country, those are called soft skills. And I call them, a phrase that I developed a while back was professional skills, because I think soft skills sound like they're unimportant when I think they're the damn near most important things we teach young people, or anyone for that matter. Because, you know, out in the workforce today, those are the hardest things to find. According to the Wall Street Journal, they did a survey back in January of 1,000 different businesses in America, and they spoke to executives and hiring managers. 92% of them, which is almost all of them, said that they value professional skills like we're talking about over even technical skills and academic knowledge. And 89% of those respondents said that's the hardest things for them to find. And that's from college graduates or people, you know, coming directly out of high school. That's anyone. That's extraordinary.
I have had the opportunity and still do of training people to do little side projects and so forth here at this station that I work for. And of course, I did the same thing throughout my career as an operations manager at different stations in Phoenix. And I've had some folks come in to this station since 2006. That's how long I've been here. And some of them would learn the craft, as I like to call it, the trade. But then they would, and then a lot of them were school age, you know, college age. And they would find another job that they really needed to get the money, because we you know, don't have a huge budget. And I said, look, I want you to do what you need to do, you know, and if you need to go after the money, then go for it. You know, this is not make or break for the station. We'll continue on whether you're here or not. We'd love to have you, but I want you to pursue what it is that you want to pursue. Well, currently I have a young man. He's got to be in his, I'm going to say, early mid-20s. And when I cut him loose to run a ball game, one of the first things that happened was he arrived late. And I didn't berate him. I did not criticize him, or I wasn't angry with him. I just said, look, I really need to have you here on time, because the ball game starts in such time, and the announcer needs that early time to do the pregame, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, so what I want you to do is I want you to text me within 30 minutes of the broadcast time to let me know that you're either there or you're almost there. You're on your way. And which he did. He was conscientious about it. He still does it to this day. He hasn't been late since. And he also took care of a technical problem that came up when we lost power. And he handled it. I never went through all of the details of how to handle all of the scenarios where you'd have technical problems. But he handled it. And I thought, wow, this guy has got it together. He's thinking. I was so impressed with that in him. Are you seeing that kind of aptitude, if you will, or capability?
Absolutely, yes. This is why I think they're the most incredible generations that we've ever seen in this country. I think, but the key component is they have to buy into the vision and the purpose of what they're doing. If there isn't, you won't get them there. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, I've got 23 people that support what I do across North America, and more than half of them are in the age group we're talking about. You know, a lot of 20s, a lot of early 30s, and they're incredible. I never ask anyone in my organization to work past typical 9 to 5 hours, Monday or 8 to 5 hours, Monday through Friday. And yet they work nights, weekends, holidays, vacations. I can't get them to shut off. They are in. Richard, I'm telling you, in all candor, I can't get them to shut off because they so buy into the vision that we have created as a group and as a team that we are going to transform both education and workforce development in this country that they are all in. They are, in fact, they push me further and faster in order to do what I do. I mean, I'll do over 70 keynote speeches this year across North America. You know, I've written, articles in national publications. I've just become a Forbes.com contributor, and I'll be writing 2 to 4 articles a month on Forbes.com. I mean, as a contributor, and so all of these things that we're doing keep pushing, the message forward, and they are so all in. And so is the difference that, these people are more capable than other people? It's like, no, there are tons of capable people. It's how do you unleash that passion, purpose, and performance? And it starts with that vision. It starts with getting them a shared purpose where they can move on to the next thing. Deloitte found this, Richard. I mean, they did a study, and I think it's about 18 months ago. It might be 22 months ago, but it was just within the last 2 years. And they did a study of people in the workforce, 39 and younger, roughly 39 and younger. And what they found to me is astonishing. What they found was that 68% of females in that group and 64% of males in that group, which is 2/3 now of what is the largest working generations in this country right now, plans to leave their current job within the next 3 years. This is a cataclysmic shift in workforce development. You know what the number one reason stated was for leaving? And it was the number one reason by far, and it wasn't boredom. But what does this tell you? Their number one reason for wanting to leave their current jobs was that they no longer want to work in an organization where pursuit of the almighty dollar is the only outcome. They want to work in an organization that gives back. They want to work in an organization that has purpose. They want to work in an organization where the pride of their contribution will add to the greater good. And you know what? Frankly, I don't see that as a bad thing. But business and industry in this country is going to struggle for the next decade to create vision and purpose that far exceeds simple shareholder value in making money. This is where it's changed.
This is one of the issues that I have a problem with when I keep hearing people talking about how capitalism and free enterprise is the greatest and it's the perfect system. And I'm going, no, it's not. I don't have a solution as to what is, but what I do know is the one factor that they didn't factor into capitalism and free enterprise was greed. And so when
there's no greed, Richard. Come on.
Greed is.
What are you talking about? What are you kidding me?
Greed is good. Greed is good. No, it's one of those. Yeah, I know. It's one of those things, though, that I tell you what, I am. Greatly pleased to hear that study as far as people leaving changing jobs in the next 3 years, and I couldn't agree more. And what I have always had a problem with is why it is that people get all bent out of shape over the various regulations that exist for corporations, for businesses, for doing business and so forth. And the first and foremost example I throw out is, how many kids under 18 do you see working in factories? It's because we have child labor laws, because companies back in the teens and 20s, 19-teens and 20s, and even earlier than that, they had kids in very hazardous working environments, and there were people who stood up and said, no, 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 we're not going to do this. And so new laws were crafted so that companies couldn't have kids under the age of 18 working in hazardous industries. Now, I was a paper boy from the age of 12 to the age of 18, and I loved that job. Was it hazardous? I didn't think so. I mean, I'm out on the road all the time with the bicycle. I could have been hit a number of times by a car.
Yeah, but it really depends, Richard, on how you chuck the paper maintaining balance going down a hill, because I was also a paper boy.
But I will tell you, that was my favorite job. Now, I was lucky in that I was delivering to multi-complex apartments that were like 2 and 3 stories high. And they hated me on Sundays because I could, from the third floor, drop a Sunday paper, and they were very big then, to the first floor on target on the mat. The only downside was boom, and it would echo through the apartment complex. And I was very good at tossing the paper. One day I tossed it up to the third floor, did not see that the resident had his door open. All of a sudden I hear coming from the apartment, wow, that was pretty good. And I'm really sorry. I apologize. Oh, no, no. You tossed it and it landed right in my lap. Thank you. That's what I call delivery. But I loved that job because I got to work with, I got to meet so many great people. That's what I love about doing this program. When we talk to these kids, these young people, do they have the same interest in being around other people? As you and I do, obviously, because, you know, the things that you're doing and the speaking engagements, you love engaging with people, obviously. You're very personable in that regard. So I'm wondering, is that there? Because as they say, one of the two top fears of human beings, number one is public speaking. The other one is dying. They'd rather be in the coffin than giving the eulogy, as they say.
I always love that one.
What's the take on the Y generation?
Well, I mean, it's like, I think with any generation that's come before them, is that there is, you know, a pool of people in each generation that, you know, would love to engage, would love to get up and speak, would love to be able to tackle these things. And I think the world has expanded the number of things that are possible out there. I mean, gosh, Richard, look at the way the world is. When you and I were growing up, what did we have? Somewhere between 3 and 5 TV channels. Today, there's, you know, over 500 if you get the full DirecTV package.
Yeah.
But add to that the internet. To it, you know, what's possible, where they can go and how they can get there. You know, and I said earlier, I said that, you know, so many young people today want to be entrepreneurs and own their own business. You know, we live in a world today where that's way easier today than it was when you and I were younger. When we were young, when we were 20 years old, it was a lot harder to start something, because what were we going to do? You know, where were we going to go? I mean, you could do a storefront, you could maybe create a widget, you could maybe do some stuff, but what are we really going to go, and how are you going to, I mean, now you can get on the internet, you can sell things on Amazon. You can, with the using Shopify as your, you know, as your e-commerce site, you know, if you could create it, market it, and sell it, you can do it online today, right in the privacy of your own home or apartment. So there are tons of things that are available to young people today, and I think, you know, there's always going to be a certain percentage that engage in that, but there are going to be others that engage in something a little different. There are going to be those who, you know, are going to be more cerebral in nature, going to be more that are more hands-on and engaged in nature. It all depends on what's possible. But the number of things that are available today are significantly more than there were years ago. So, you know, I think this is a great time to be a young person if they can avoid the distractions that are holding them back. And I think that's the big challenge in America today, is that there are so many distractions. I tell young people all the time, and when I get an opportunity to speak in front of a couple of hundred young people, you know, high school kids or even eighth graders, you know, and sometimes I get invited to speak to ambassador groups and things like that. And one of the things I love to tell them at the end of the speech, man, I love to look at them and I go, you know, I mean, there's some things. So if I could give all of you in this room today a competitive advantage, if I could give it to you in 60 seconds, and at the end of 60 seconds, you could take this, you could immediately implement it in your life, and it will change the way people engage with you. Your parents will be wildly proud of you. Your teachers will talk about you positively when you walk out of a room. Your employers, summer jobs, part-time jobs, whatever it is, they will beat a path to your door to hire you. If I could give that to you in 60 seconds, how many of you would like that? And I get every hand to raise up because everybody goes, 60 seconds, I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I tell them. I said, here's what I want you to do. In everything that you do, wherever possible, do this and your life will change. And here it is. Show up a few minutes early, stay a few minutes late, and care while you're there. And put your phone away and your life will change in that time. Because that's what employers are looking for. They want people, you know, to show up a couple of minutes early, stay a couple minutes late, don't watch the clock. You know, they want people to engage, you know, care while you're here. Mm. When you leave, when you head home, let the distractions take your mind. And here's the other thing I tell young people, because I learned this when I was young. I was like, you know, you're only doing two things in your life at any given time. You're either building your dream or you're building someone else's. Now, you know, when you spend $12 to go out to a movie, you know, those 2 hours you're in the movie theater, whose dream are you building? Are you building your dream or are you building someone else's, the people who created and, you know, starred in and produced the movie? And everybody gets it, you know? And I say, look, there's nothing wrong with building other people's dreams in your life. But your life will truly go in the direction you want it to go the day you realize that you need to carve out time to build your own. And kids are embracing this message in how to create a competitive advantage in their life and how to start moving forward so that they're building something that leads to something based on their own interests, talents, and abilities.
You know, the line from there was a songwriter, singer, Harry Chapin, who had a conversation he was sharing that he had had with his grandfather, I believe it was. And his grandfather was saying, you know, Harry, I've lived a long life and I've done a lot of stuff. And there are two kinds of tired. He says, you know, after that, there's a good tired and there's a bad tired. And the bad tired is when you lay your head on the pillow and you sleep uneasy because all day long you've been fighting someone else's battles. You've been living someone else's dreams and you just can't get over that. And the good tired is when you've spent the day, you've been fighting your battles and your dreams and you've been working on those kinds of things. And he says, you know, Harry, I've lived a long time and I've reached the point where I've got a good tired. I'm good and tired.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I find it fascinating that what you were saying brought back memories. This is my 40th year in this business, and I go
Congrats.
Back to the first radio station I ever worked for, and I mean the first one I ever worked for when I was 19. And I went through various transitions with them from moving from one location to another. And I would spend 40 to 60 hours a week, if not more, at that station producing and doing the different things because I just loved it. As a matter of fact, I carry with me on my hat a pin that represents a certificate I received at a certain point for 400 hours of volunteer time at that station. Because it's a nonprofit. It's one for blind and visually impaired people. And I loved it. I mean, next to Paperboy, that would be the next place I would love to go back to. With the same people I worked with back then. Certainly, it's not the same today. But when you have that kind of love and passion for what you're doing. And I'll bring up the example of this young man one more time. When I was training him, I said, I am going to teach you how I do it. And this is, I think, and I may have done this unconsciously to what you're saying about making him feel engaged and a part of the process. I said, I'm going to show you how I do it, the techniques that I use to get the results that we want. However, you can do it my way, or you can find your own style and technique, because all I'm concerned about is the result. As long as we get the result that we want out of that broadcast, I don't care if you do it standing on your head with swim fins on, okay? Smoking a cigar. Well, skip the smoking cigar. But that's what I told him. And I said, so you give somebody the freedom, but you say, look, we're going to start here at point A. We want to get to point B. I don't care if you go to C, D, E, F, and G, as long as you get back to B. Is that a technique? Is that a process that you have found works in terms of engaging this particular generation we're talking about, the Y generation, to feel as though they're actually contributing something and that they feel connected.
Yeah, absolutely, Richard. I mean, that's you're creating the structure from which they can, you know, deviate from what has been done in the past. And that gives them the freedom then to come up with a better way. They take remarkable pride in coming up and using their ingenuity, but coming up with something that that may go to the next step. I mean, they're looking for that kind of notoriety. They're looking for that kind of, you know, self-satisfaction to do something that hasn't been done, you know, tweaking it in a way. Let's face it, Richard, you're 59, I'm 57. We established that early on, and I don't think either of us had a birthday since we started this. So I'm assuming that you're still 59. I'm still 57. But you know, we're very much the same way. You know, we will. Yeah. If someone came to us and said, please do it just this way, you and I might be more accommodating to say, you know, okay, you know, I buy that. All right. But at the end of the day, we want to take our experience. We want to take the things that we know. We want to take the knowledge that we have. We want to take whatever academic knowledge, technical competencies, and professional skills and tweak it in a way to get a bigger impact. Because you've seen parts of the world that I haven't seen and vice versa. And we each come with different experiences that allow us to look at every issue and challenge in a unique way. And so the way you framed it, the way you structured it, gives them an ability to, you know, stay within the frame, so to speak, so that you've built the, you know, hey, we still have to do it kind of this way, but how we get to the actual nuance of it, you know, hey, if you can find a way to knock this out of the park within this structure, go, go, go. Now you've given them permission to take it to the next level. And I do that with my team.
Answering Why, Mark C. Perna is my guest, and we are talking about a group of people who are very much a part of our society, and he's teaching them how to unleash passion, purpose, and performance. And this is the younger generations, at least as far as he and I are concerned, from 39 and below, the age of 39 and below. By the way, Mark C. Perna, P-E-R-N-A, is the website. Add a .com to that, markcperna.com. We will be connected to and linked to that website, Mark, so that people can go directly to your site, find out more about the work that you're doing, get a copy of the book as well, which I'm sure is available on Amazon as well. One of the things that I found interesting for me, and I want to have you talk a little bit about this, I was introduced to the computer in 1994. And I was scared out of my mind to touch the keyboard because I knew somewhere on that board was a red button that would blow everything up, blow the computer up, destroy everything, and then I would have to pay for it.
And if you hit the control key and the red button, you could take the country down with you.
Could take the country down, yeah, shut absolutely. Down the entire electrical grid, and then you're in trouble. Well, once I got beyond that fear and realized there was no red button, although I'm still looking for the any key, I began to build them. I could build a computer. I could get the case. I would get the peripherals. I could put it together. I could get it to work, install the software, the operating system. By the way, I have more experience installing Windows 3.1 than I think anybody else on the planet. Because when I first started, this is how arrogant I was. I would go into the file directory, and I'd say, oh, I don't need that file and that file and that file. They were DLL files. They were execute files.
Yeah, who would need that
stuff? Who needs those?
Who would need that?
I'd shut it down. I'd start it up, and it wouldn't work. I'm going, what happened? I don't understand. And I'd have to reinstall until I finally realized those were rather critical parts of the program. But I began to build the computers, and I began to build them rather extravagantly. I would have two hard drives, and I would have multiple CD-ROM drives and multiple sound cards and so on and so forth. I'm not a gamer, so you know I didn't get into that level of it. It was all sound editing and so forth, but I loved it. And I had to the gentleman who introduced me to the computer, he was so good at it, and he was right when he said to me, says, Richard, in spite of my fears at the time, once you get into this, you're going to wonder why you didn't get into it sooner. You're going to love it. And I did, and I still do. What is the technology of the 20 teens that this generation has to work with now? Is it coding? Is it the electronics like the phones? Or is it something, or is it AI? Or is it something that maybe hasn't been introduced to the general public yet that maybe you're aware of that is going to have a huge impact? Because as you said earlier, the kindergartners or the first graders of today are going to be in jobs that don't even exist yet.
You know, in my opinion, it's anything that's easy and shortcut and hackable. You know, and when I say hackable, well, yeah, I know. But, you know, when I say hackable, I don't mean necessarily hacking the system.
I understand.
But I mean, nowadays, you know, just for anybody who's a little bit older, you know, a hack is just a shortcut way of getting something done or something, you know, more economically done or efficiently done.
Right.
You know, what's the hack? What's the secret? What's the, you know, give me the goods here.
Right.
And I think for young people today, I mean, there's one thing that we can guarantee is that technology is going to change robustly faster and faster and faster. I saw a stat the other day, blew my mind. IBM came out with a stat and said that 90% of the data in the world today has been created in the last 2 years. I mean, if you really stop to think about that, that's how fast technology, AI, and things are just absolutely exploding. So it's not the specific kind of technology other than it's whatever makes something quicker, faster, streamlined, less expensive, more efficient. That's what they do. I mean, you know, when I talk about young people all the time, I say they're, you know, at this point, they're born purchasing agents. I don't care what I buy. My kids tell me I could have bought it cheaper somewhere else. Absolutely. I don't care what it is. It does not matter one way, shape, or form. I could have bought it cheaper somewhere else. You know, it's like, Dad, you could have gone to this website, you know, and if you clicked your heels three times and sent them a picture and hashtagged it, you know, Dad looking silly, they would have given you 5% more off. All of these things are possible today for young people. And, you know, like I said, the more you kind of understand this kind of, you know, complexity of how they think, it allows you to connect with them and engage with them. It allows you to sell to them. It allows you to market to them. But streamlined, efficient, short, simple. They do not want to go through three pages of your website. If they go right to your website, it better be right there or they're gone.
Absolutely. Right?
This short attention span, that kind of stuff.
Well, I'm kind of that way too, because if it takes too long for a page even to load, even in this day and age on my phone or my tablet, let alone my computer, I'm going away because it's like, wait a minute, I'm trying to get some information here and I try not to be so impatient. But it's like I've had other web pages on this same situation, same session as I got on this computer that came up lickety split, and I'm already doing what I need to do. And your website is taking forever. By the way, and I had an interesting example of helping somebody with a technical problem with their website. I kept going to their website, and I get this warning saying that whatever the security certificate was expired or something along those lines, right? And the gal was wondering why she wasn't getting any kind of the people weren't going to their website. They weren't getting some numbers, you know, the analytics as far as people visiting and seeing what they have to offer. And I says, well, I think it's because your hosting service hasn't updated your security certificate. And as soon as she went to her webmaster, who then went to the hosting service, whatever they did worked, because now, boom. And so I sent her a response to her email. I said, in all caps, so I'm yelling, perfect, perfect, and 3 exclamation points. That's all I sent. And I know a little HTML, enough to get me in trouble. But I love this stuff, you know, and I'm and my dad, who is 88 this year, loves playing on his computer, always has. And so we have some great conversations. Technology is going to be incredible down the road here. Mark C. Parn, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program. And should you ever find yourself out here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation and to continue to instill in us not just a respect for, but a greater consideration as well as appreciation for the younger generation, so that we don't hear coming out from some corridor somewhere, oh, those young whippersnappers and their music is just terrible. Get them out of here. So I hope that you can join us here in Santa Barbara.
Would be honored, Richard, to join you in Santa Barbara. So we will make that happen sometime in the near future.
Hey, if you can make it to Tucson, it's not that much further.
So true.
I want to remind our listeners that markcparna.com is the website. Answering Why is the title of the book, Unleashing Passion, Purpose, and Performance in Younger Generations, the three Ps, as it were. I have three final questions I want to ask you, and I ask all of my guests these questions, so you may have addressed it a little bit during the program. First question is, who is Mark C. Parna?
He's an international speaker and best-selling author and someone who's trying to make a difference in both education and workforce development in this country.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I want people to understand the tremendous potential of the younger generations and how to unleash passion, purpose, and performance in their lives. So all of that comes into focus with what I do in education and workforce development. And so how that we unleash that passion, purpose, and performance in younger generations.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
What a great question. My life's purpose is to make a difference, to get people to understand that inspiration and motivation can come from within. It doesn't always have to come from outside of you. And the more it can come from within on a regular basis, you can accomplish anything you want.
All right. I thank you so much. And I thank you for listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And again, go to markcparna.com, Answering Why, the title of the book. And I'm Richard Dugan. And we hope that you will join us next time. And until that next time, love to Lal.